For over 30 years, BHM has been the trusted CPA firm for closely held businesses across Ohio and West Virginia.
BHM has made life easier for myself and our company when it comes to tax and accounting.
At BHM, we develop top talent to tackle your most complex challenges.
A CPA firm can be the lifeblood to a successful business. If you don't feel that way about your firm, ask yourself why not.
Visit bhmcpagroup.com to schedule a consultation. BHM, the CPA firm simplifying the complex.
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.
Sky does things you would tell your children, you hope you tell your children, don't ever do. Don't lie shamelessly. Don't take other people's stuff. You know, don't sexually assault people. don't do these things.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and because I'm not a lawyer, I've asked my good friend George Conway, the Society for the Rule of Law, to explain the legal news to me. And today we are in our new studio, and he's close enough to touch, to put hands on.
Well, we did that. The old studio was like that, too.
I know.
I had my Coke, but we've been doing this remote for a while.
I know, and remote's hard. But you know, Barry, our producer, he has a ringtone. His ringtone, when I call him, is me admitting on a podcast how often I put my hands on him. And he thinks that's really funny.
I think it's funny. Well, that's going to be the next. No, it's going to be the entirety of the next episode. Right.
Yeah. Call me right now.
No. Yeah. But I do like being in striking distance, just
right.
In case.
Okay, because I need to. You have
yeah,
to whack
that's
me.
Right. You
yeah,
know
exactly.
So you know, we keep thinking the legal news might abate, but actually, there's still been a lot of it here.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of. There will be a lot of legal. This is different legal news.
I mean, yeah, it's the illegal news.
Now that the first felon in the United States is not going to serve time.
Yeah.
FFOTUS. That's my new acronym.
Is it
FFOTUS? FOTUS.
Yeah. Shouldn't it just be FFOTUS?
Well, it's first felon of the United States.
Sure.
We have to be respectful. Some people treat it as some other F.
I see.
But that's their choice. That's a matter of individual choice. But that's why I like FFOTUS.
You know, this is what I always think, George.
Yes.
Somebody who's very respectful to Donald Trump.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. First of all, the first felon capitalizing it, I think, shows the respect
shows the
we
deference.
Have for his amazing achievement of being the first felon ever to become president of the United States, the first
sure.
convicted felon. I mean, I considered him a felon when the jury verdict came in, but technically people are right. It's when the jury verdict is then turned into a judgment at the sentencing that somebody becomes a felon. And also, he's first felon because no other felon has really, you know, I mean, he stands first among felons.
Yeah.
I mean, he really is. I mean,
he was the first in your heart. But go.
If I were a felon, I would say, "Wow, that guy gets away with so much."
Right.
He is. I would. If I were a criminal psychopath, I would aspire to be Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I think it's a mark of respect to call him the first felon. Capital felon of the United States of America.
You know, I hadn't thought about this in a while, but Chris Rock had this bit about Marion Barry.
Yeah.
For a long time, who was the longtime mayor of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, he had a little problem with this certain powder that was illegal.
He did. He had a bit of a drug problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said that this, we would say, Marion Barry, you know, your parents would say, don't do drugs, you'll never be anything. They'd say, well, I could be mayor. Now.
Don't, your mom said, don't start an insurrection. Well, mom was wrong. You can do that.
You can do it.
You know?
Don't keep the documents
that
the government's
always,
asking for back in your bathroom.
Even if they're classified. Right. You don't have to give them back. And you don't have to tell the truth to the FBI. You don't have to ask women permission before you do stuff to them. I mean, there's so many things that if you were a criminal psychopath, you'd say, wow, you know, why am I in jail?
Yeah.
He must be doing something right.
Well.
And, you know, I think that's the example he sets for everyone.
I will say there's this quotation that I like. What's wrong is still wrong, even if everybody's doing it. And what's right is still right, even if nobody's doing it. Because these are objective truths.
Yeah, I do agree with that in all seriousness. Think about how hard it is. I mean, think of the one of the things I don't understand is this guy does things you would tell your children, you hope you tell your children, don't ever do. Don't lie shamelessly. Don't take other people's stuff. You know, don't sexually assault people. don't do these things. And he does it with reckless abandon, and it's okay. And 49.9% of the public were voted for the guy.
Yeah.
Of the voting populace. I mean, the people who showed up to show up.
And I think this time, you know, I've been thinking a lot about
how different. It doesn't make me happy.
I know, how different this time is. And part of it is I've been watching these. We'll get to the confirmation hearings in a little bit. But watching them, you realize how much he's corrupted everybody around
him.
How much everything. Now, you know, you can't.
Joni Ernst. Joni Ernst.
What a humiliation.
I don't know how I would be. I would wear a paper bag to the Senate if I had to grovel like that.
Yeah.
Why is holding public office so important that you're willing to sacrifice your principles and your dignity? I do not understand that. And I never will. I just don't understand it.
Well, you know, the thing about Joni Ernst, this isn't even on the list of things to talk about, but the Joni Ernst thing has stuck with me in part because, A, she was qualified to do that job.
Absolutely.
And instead it goes to a weekend Fox News host who's been accused of sexual assault, a thing that she has done.
Right.
She has sort of dedicated her career to trying to stamp out of the military. Yeah. And instead now she is forced to confirm because.
And she wouldn't even meet with the victim.
No, because the MAGA folks came for her. They gave her a taste of the intimidation that they do to anybody, especially a Republican who's not following in line.
I wonder what's most compelling about the intimidation. Is it the fear of physical attack, or is it the fear of a primary challenge 2 or 4 years hence, whenever she is up for re-election? It's 2 years?
Yeah, she's up in 2.
Why is the job so important to people that they're willing to sacrifice their dignity? I just don't understand that.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
And we're watching so many people do it.
Yeah.
Nikki Haley, he tweeted today or bleated or truthed or whatever, talking about how basically all these people who worked for him, right? If you're Bolton, you're Mattis, you're Pence, but also bird brain Nikki Haley, any of those people, if any resumes come their way, was basically his point. Like, I'm hiring a bunch of people, but if you ever worked for these people or they recommend you, don't bother.
Right.
Nikki Haley was the only person among that group, though, who endorsed Donald Trump.
It didn't matter. And what's funny about – I mean, that's an interesting question of why her – because there have been other people who have crossed Donald Trump in some ways and then made up with him.
Mm-hmm.
But Nikki Haley – couldn't really do that, which I think is interesting. And you know, again, he calls into mind our prior discussions about Nikki. Like, what was she doing? She absolutely did herself no good. If you're going to challenge the guy, you have to go after him hammer and tong. She didn't do that until the very end. And then she took it all back, sort of.
Yeah.
And so who was made happy by that? What principle was served? What interest of hers was served? It makes no sense to me. And I will never – one of the many, many things I'll never understand.
No, I think she hosts a radio show, and she is now continuing to be ritualistically humiliated and by Trump, who wants to make sure everybody knows that any attachment to her actually excommunicates them from the Republican Party.
Right.
And so – no, I think that.
So, if we listen to her radio program, does that mean we won't get jobs in the next administration?
I mean, or does that mean,
or does
to
that,
to her radio
or does
program.
That may mean that we get better cells at Guantanamo? I'm trying to let me figure that. I got, you know, everybody else in this town seems to want to do these calculations about where
sure.
their interests best lie. We need to start doing that.
I don't want to do that.
I
don't want to do that.
Well, you know, I mean, sell. You know, real estate is everything, and sell position. You know, I want a corner sell.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because they come with windows, or are they bigger?
No. Well, the bars. I mean, yeah, the bars are different. I think they're a little more ornate. It's like a corner office and a partner's office and a law firm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is the last show we're going to do before Donald Trump's inauguration.
Before we become the United States of Kakistan.
Yeah. Sure. All the oligarchs are going.
Yeah.
They get special seats at the inauguration.
And the TikTok guy, did you see that today? The TikTok guy's going to be there.
Because is China our enemy or not? Do you know?
Well, we admire Xi because he wields the kind of power that we would like to wield.
Yeah.
You know, you can just throw your opponents in jail.
Sure.
And, you know, he's a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but we can't be too nice to them because then we can't make political points mm-hmm. about standing up to them.
Yeah.
Because we're racist. And
okay.
And also there's, you know, so but at the same time, they can't piss them too off. I mean, they did give us to go back to the racist point. They did give us the Kung Flu, right? Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
The
remember
Kung Flu.
That.
Remember?
Yeah.
Remember that some high public official in the Trump administration started using that phrase and then was called out by a CBS reporter that said a high public official was using this racist phrase, and then various spokesmen, one of whom I will not name, came out and said, "That's terrible. Whoever did this is doing a disservice to the administration," or something like criticized them.
Of course, it was Trump.
But it turned out to be Trump, and then you know, oops. It's okay. Now it's okay. But anyway, I mean, but what's interesting though is I don't know to what extent they really are serious because, I mean, here's my phone, right? This was made in China.
Yeah.
All the stuff that we get cheap is made in China. China's running a $1 trillion trade surplus this year. And what do they do with that money? It's in dollars. They buy our debt.
They do buy our debt.
Okay. And if they ever stop doing that, I mean, they have a problem. They don't have nowhere else to put their money, and they've wasted. I mean, China in a lot of ways it's incredible. They have the workforces to produce this phone. We have the brains to design the phone. They have the skilled workforce that we do not to make this phone, and they can do it more cheaply because they have that skilled workforce doesn't get paid as much in real economic terms as the typical American worker gets to pay. I was thinking about the economics of this the other night, and it's kind of scary. So they, you know, they get all these dollars, and what do? They buy our debt. They make deficit spending on our part cheap. One of these is what happens when that stops. Someday it's going to stop. You know, the Chinese have a bizarre economy where basically you can go through cities where there are just billions of dollars of buildings that are empty skyscrapers. So what, you know, this somehow, I don't know. I'd like to get like, you know, maybe we should start having guests. I'd love to get Steve Rattner on here and to talk about, it's like, how does this end? You know, with our deficit spending and the trade deficit, and Trump can't And if Trump actually does try to stop, you know, does something to harm U.S.-China trade, then people aren't going to get the cheap shit that they like, whether it be Xbox, because I don't know if Xbox, but I assume, you know, I mean, a lot of the components made in our automobiles are clearly going to be, you know, must be made in China. I mean, we don't make LCD screens, right?
We could literally do separate podcast on all the inherent contradictions in Trump's promises. I think China is one of them.
Yeah.
Like, how are they our greatest geostrategic foe?
Remember Bolton's book? Bolton's book was.
Yeah, he said that they approved the genocide of the Uyghurs.
Yeah, well, but in Bolton's book, he also said that Trump was sucking up to Xi.
Sure.
You know, and
Trump
and,
loves a dictator.
Yeah, no,
But you know who else loves the Chinese? And this is where the Elon-Trump relationship I do find fascinating, and it really is a whole separate conversation. But like Doge, on one hand, you know, he's already walked back his $2 trillion to $1 trillion point. Okay, well, considering that the discretionary budget is only $1.7 trillion, $2 trillion always seemed like an insane number. But okay, so now we're at $1 trillion.
Yeah, no, there's a way you'd have to cut entitlements to the bone.
So how are they going to cut $1 trillion out, and Trump's going to cut taxes? Trump's not going to take any political pain in order to generate solvency for Social Security. So how are those things going to work? Many of these things are intention.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, this is why Trump not having a coherent philosophy or ideology allows him to make wanton promises to all Americans.
He's shameless. He'll just say anything.
That's right.
And then he turned, you know, I mean, where's Mexico's check? We've been through this before.
Yeah.
The check from Mexico.
I thought they were paying for that wall.
Yeah.
He doesn't even talk about the wall anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, what wall?
What wall?
Okay, hold on. Last time, we're totally off.
No,
off the rails.
We should do a protest. Yeah, no, we should do a protest on Monday where we say, "Where's the wall?"
Well, you joke, but I'm not sure that we shouldn't be spending time trying to demand that Trump keep his promises, even the insane ones. I'm sorry, because he's going to get sworn in on Monday, and that Ukraine conflict, he said that's going to be over in 24 hours. So on Tuesday,
you know,
I want to know if that's going to be over.
Well, you know, that's something I always thought about. Psychopath was one.
Yeah.
But another thing that I always wanted to do was do ads that just basically say, here are all the lies. Just, you know, where you do basically 30, 15 or 20 second spots where you say he said this, it was a lie, or he didn't make the promise. And, you know, you just throw them out there. You could do hundreds of these, literally.
Well, the promises made, promises broken is what they used against Biden. We should use it against him.
Well, this is an extension of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's related. I mean, he just lies, okay?
Right.
And one of the things that people do not understand, and now we should have a psychologist guest. I'm like, it's like, why don't people understand that they've been bilked? They don't want to – I understand the psychology – that you don't want to admit you were bilked.
Sure.
But at some point, you know, you buy these lottery tickets, or you're the old lady at home or old man at home in the assisted living facility sending money to something, and the shit doesn't come back in the mail.
Right.
And you realize, oh my God, my bank account's empty. I've been scammed. And I think I think there needs to be this kind of messaging now, since, you know, you just list all the crazy things he's promised and basically start telling people that was a lie. He didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
You were fooled. And I don't think that's something really hasn't been done over the last 7 or 8 years.
We should have a different podcast where all we do is brainstorm campaigns to run.
Yeah.
It's a whole other thing. Sarah and George.
Figure out how to cause trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, anyway.
I want to talk about a few
things. We're
going to
talk about actually stuff that we're supposed to talk about.
All right. So we talked a lot last week about the forthcoming release of Jack Smith's final reports. And since then, volume one of two about the January 6th election interference case was released. Not a lot of new intel in there, but what did you think when you looked at it?
Well, that was the interesting aspect, that there really wasn't a lot new in it. And That doesn't reflect that the case wasn't strong. It reflects that the case was pretty sufficient for a long time. The report was 137 pages. I mean, if you remember the Mueller report, it was, you know, it was much longer than that, probably 10 times longer, or at least one volume was several times longer. And in these 137 pages, I'd have to go back, but only a small fraction of it was the facts, because the facts had already been laid out. The facts were laid out in the January 6th committee report. The facts were laid out in the indictment, because it was a speaking indictment that contained a lot of information. And then the facts were laid out after the Supreme Court's immunity decision, when the case was remanded back to the district court and it became incumbent, pursuant to the procedures effectively mandated by the Supreme Court, for the special counsel to lay out the evidence that he would proffer at trial. And that was a fairly complete rendition of what they had. So there really wasn't anything new in here. But it's still... And the facts section of this document probably is only 20 or 30 pages. I'd have to go back and check. It's just not that long. It's a simple story. And if you look at it, and I haven't done this exercise, highlighting things that we knew on January 8th, highlighting things that we knew by the time the January 6th committee had completed its public hearings in July or August of 2022, even before the report.
Yeah. It was before the special counsel, because the special counsel only happened when Trump announced he was running for president, and then a conflict of interest became apparent.
Well, that was – I mean, that was part of it. I think the other part of it was they realized they had to do it for the documents case too. But but that's what I'm about to get to, is this case unquestionably could have been brought 2 years before it was brought. 1 or 2 years.
This is what I want to talk about.
And you know, so you've heard me talk about Garland, and I've been respectful of Garland. I haven't criticized him for the delay that much. And, you know, I was giving the benefit of the doubt to many people who were pro-Garland, like Marcy Wheeler, who's virulently pro-Garland. You know,
she came for me this week.
Well, she came for everybody, because she's still on the Garland band. She's going to come for me, I guess, if I say this. But I've been listening to her for these, and I was like, okay, I get it. There are different ways to skin a cat. I had thought that there should have been a special counsel appointed on day one. I wrote a 5,000-word piece in the Washington Post that was published on January 22, 2021, that said that there not just should be one, there should be one for the insurrection and the post-election fraud. There should be one for the campaign finance Stormy Daniels case. There should be one for Ukraine, and there should be one for, you know, him not paying his taxes on all this stuff. Of course, that, you know, it was like making a bid for a house where you bid low, or you're selling the house, you ask for a high price, hoping that you at least get one of the things you want. But I really thought that, you know, you had to start an investigation of him immediately. And two reasons. One is, it's going to take a long time. And two is, you have to say, this was potentially criminal. There is sufficient factual predication for the proposition that the man committed a crime. He should be investigated. And that's, you know, if you look at what Brazil did, they did immediately that. I mean, their system is different. I think the judges appoint, conduct investigations. But one of the things that happened was he got off the hook very quickly, and people have forgotten about what he did, and it was never ever directly couched as criminal in the discussions of what happened, as opposed to what the people did, smearing feces on the walls and breaking things and on Capitol Hill. It was never, ever considered, you know, it never was framed in the public mind as potentially criminal from the very beginning. And that allowed him to kind of wiggle away and go into quiet mode, and people forget about what he did. The January 6th committee hearings reversed that to some extent, but the damage, in a sense, was already done. But the January 6th committee finally laid out how this could be prosecuted as fraud on the United States and as obstruction of an official proceeding, things we kind of already knew, the lawyers and people following very closely already knew, but it really laid it out. This is criminal. And when you look at Jack Smith's report, what's interesting, and Marcy Wheeler got into it with Ryan Goodman, a professor at NYU, who's a former prosecutor. Ryan Goodman pointed out that on page, I think it's 118 of the report, I may have the page wrong, the special counsel notes that it was in August of 2022 that the government started subpoenaing grand jury testimony from White House aides. Okay? That was after the January 6th
committee wrapped.
Before the report, but after they wrapped their public hearings. And essentially, 19 months, do I have that right? 17 or 18 months after January 6th.
Yeah.
And that time was exceedingly valuable. And they rely, I'm sure, a lot on what the January 6th committee held, but they had a lot more investigative tools. The grand jury is the most extremely powerful tool. You can't get out of grand jury testimony the way you can wiggle your way out of congressional testimony like so many did, or at least, you know, you wouldn't have had, for example, Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, saying, well, I really can't tell you what the president said, and you have to kind of infer or read between the lines.
Right.
He wouldn't have been able to do that in a grand jury after President Biden waived executive privilege on behalf of the executive branch in the United States of America. If they had actually conducted, you know, had framed it as Trump being a subject of the investigation from day one, and I think the reason to appoint a special counsel would have been, at that point, let the U.S. Attorney's Office, and, you know, they also had to bring in U.S. assistant U.S. attorneys from other districts to prosecute the people on the ground on the Capitol, but have a separate investigation in tandem of the higher-ups. Because the fact of the matter is, if you're looking for links between the guy, you know, the guy wearing the furry hat,
right,
what was his name?
I don't remember what that guy's name was.
But between the Proud Boys and Trump, you know, you're going to get, it's like seven layers of, you're never going to actually show a conspiracy that goes all the way down to the bottom. And you didn't have to, which is what Jack Smith's indictment ultimately showed. That case, and the fact that it was only like 30 pages of facts or so in this report, it wasn't that complicated. Most of it we saw on live TV and on our Twitter app.
So I wasn't going to mention this Marcy Wheeler person because I don't really know her, and I confine most of my real legal analysis and news to this podcast with you. But I did, when this report came out and I was skimming through it, my immediate reaction was deep frustration at Merrick Garland. And I got to say, I have not been a big Merrick Garland critic throughout, in part because I recognize that Donald Trump strains our institutions and its stewards in ways that we're just, people aren't prepared for, right? Like Merrick Garland didn't want to prosecute the former president of the United States. And I understand that. However, I just, and look, some of it is absolutely Monday morning quarterbacking.
Yeah, that's why I don't like to do it, but
it's hard because you know now, we know how it turned out. And what we know is that by refusing to from the jump, and I'll tell you, sorry, one of the other things that I think is difficult is it should have been a political remedy, right? Like they should have impeached him, and that should have, like that could have done
right,
it.
But everybody, but there was a diffusion of responsibility.
That's right.
I mean, McConnell on February 13, I think it was 2021, basically, look,
we couldn't convict him because he was no longer president, which of course was because I delayed the trial until after he left office.
Pretty good Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, no, no. And and then he says, well, there is a criminal law in this country and there are remedies for that. And it's like, okay, so he points it at the Justice Department. And what does the Justice Department do for 2 years?
Yeah. So, but this is where. So, Marcy Wheeler.
But let me before you get to Marcy Wheeler, I'm going to say, but the fundamental problem. Yeah. And Biden apparently shares, reportedly, everything I've heard, is mad at Garland because Garland sat on his ass for 2 years. You know, and I think he's got every right to be. But put that aside. Go talk about Marjorie Wheeler.
Here's the thing. So I blue skied or whatever, but I was making the point that, like, look, the inaction by Garland is going to reverberate through history.
Yeah.
And she, like, I don't know her, but she was like, this is QAnon. You're spreading disinformation. Like, came hard and hot with a lot of this stuff.
She feels very strongly that people were unfair to Garland. But it made me, so you know what I did?
I was like, I'm going to actually delete this. Because what I said, my point was, look, it wasn't until the January 6th committee did its work that these guys even got their heads out of their asses to really start doing something. I didn't say that. I just said it took that pressure.
Right. I made the same point yesterday too.
Well, and so that's what she accused me of QAnon style thinking for saying. And so I actually deleted it. And I sort of said, look, because you know this didn't have all the context, because he was appointed. The special counsel was actually appointed, not just because the January 6th committee had finished their work and put it all out there, but because Donald Trump announced he was running for president.
I think that was
the precipitating event.
Well, so I'm not sure that's true.
Well, I should have called you before I deleted it.
Well, it's okay. But I think here's my theory about what happened from a bureaucratic or political standpoint. I don't mean political in the politics sense, but of just sort of the mechanics of what happened. They didn't want to do it. They started low down. They didn't want to get into fights with the prior administration. They didn't think about the consequences of not doing that. And then the documents case comes along, which was so egregious, so outrageous. And they took a long time to get around to the point of executing that search warrant.
Mm-hmm.
They took about anybody else would have raided Mar-a-Lago months before.
Right.
But they finally came to the conclusion because Trump was thinking, like, they didn't even do anything to me. They aren't investigating me for January 6th, I'm thinking. And it's like, I'm not scared of these people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to jerk them around on these documents. They're mine. And I think what happened was it got to the point where they had acted so weakly toward Trump that Trump then bought himself a special counsel because they had to do something about the documents case. It was too – I mean, it's basically – it's like having the meth lab in your basement and showing it on TV, okay? And so the comment – and then while you're at it, it's like, well, the January 6th committee has shown that this is criminal. It took that combination of events and not the fact that he ran for – I think the fact that he was running for president, I think that was a factor. But I think that there should have been a special prosecution team just by virtue of the – you know, it's not a U.S. attorney shop. It's a main justice job and it's a massive job. And it made sense to have a special prosecutor just to basically manage it all. Mm-hmm. And – the fact is, he didn't do it until those three things happened. It didn't have to be that way. It should have been the Brazil model is they started the investigation as soon as Bolsonaro left the country.
Yeah.
And he left the country because he was afraid of getting arrested.
See, I have a tough time. I hate to go – I don't want to go hard at Merrick Garland because I think Merrick Garland is a good person.
Exactly. That's how I feel.
Who was trying – to balance in this incredibly difficult way,
he's trying to
knowing the historical outcome.
Correct.
How to best navigate this?
And remember, he was trying to. He felt that the Justice Department had been politicized in the prior administration.
Right.
He was trying to lower the temperature.
Yes, that's right.
And you can't do that with this guy. You can't. You cannot. You give this guy an inch, he'll take a mile.
Yeah. I think that it is just true, though, knowing what we know now and understanding that Merrick Garland didn't know it at the time, it wasn't just about giving Donald Trump an inch. It was the right thing to do to prosecute him. Like, and I remember being a little squidgy on this, but like you look at Jack Smith's report and you're like, oh no, it's all in there. It is. It's like, it's right there. And he should have gone to jail for this, what he was doing. And we saw it all then on the January 6th committee. Like, I actually defended Garland until the January 6th committee. And then when you look at Jack Smith's report, you think it was just they ran out the clock.
Yeah.
They ran out the clock.
They ran out the clock with the help of the Supreme Court. Yeah. Eileen Cannon, is that case, that was pure luck. Yeah.
Just by getting that judge.
Just by getting that judge, there was a 1 in 4 chance because the case had to be filed in Palm Beach where his residence was, and she's one of the judges that hears cases in that section of the district. And, you know, but for the it was random selection. But for that random selection, he could be a convicted federal felon as well, a convicted. But the failure to conduct the January 6th investigation as an investigation of whether Donald Trump committed a crime from the date of Merrick Garland swearing in was a fatal error, I think. But that being said, none of this excuses the 49.9%.
No.
Okay. That's like.
Well, this is one of the things that people do, right? When they want to tell, they're like, well, you should blame Mitch McConnell. Check. Done. I blame Mitch McConnell.
So much blame to go around. There's so much blame for Donald Trump to go around. I share some blame. Okay. He wouldn't be here maybe it's a weird story, but you know, if I hadn't told my ex-wife about a seat on the condo board they wanted to put me on and I didn't want to take it, and then she took it, and that's how she got to meet Donald Trump. You ever hear that story?
If I have, I'd forgotten it.
No, it's crazy.
She was on the Trump Tower condo board?
On the Trump World Tower condo board. I've told this to the Washington Post.
And that's how they met?
That's how they met.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to be on the board, and I came.
Just because you hate boards?
Well, I don't hate boards. It's just like I don't want to be in the
condo boards are terrible.
I don't want to be in a freaking elevator and have people say, my hot water doesn't work. It's what's wrong with this building?
You lived in Trump World Tower?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it had great views. It actually wasn't a bad building.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Google Conway Trump World Tower.
You know, I'm watching I'm watching Back to the Future with my kids.
Yeah. I would like to get in the. I forget. Get back in the DeLorean.
We could fix everything. I would fire up that flux capacitor.
We would fix everything.
And I would put you on that condo board.
I would have. No. What I said to the Washington Post was, I would not have mentioned it. I turned it down when I got home.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to do it all over again.
There is something really depressing about thinking that. You walked in for dinner, threw your keys on the counter, mentioned this annoying thing. Kellyanne said, I'll take that seat. And like, boom, she helped Donald Trump become president in 2016.
You know, that was what turned around their campaign. He all of a sudden, she got him to read from a teleprompter. And he was behaved halfway normal for a few weeks.
I remember those normal weeks.
Right. It wasn't completely normal.
Sure.
But it was the most normal we've ever seen him.
That's
my point is my point is there's a lot of blame to go around.
Sure. I will say
for how we got to this current circumstance.
Part of what happens though is along that sort of blame trajectory is that people get more and more information.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And at this point both Merrick Garland, Mitch McConnell, the American people they all had enough information about Donald Trump at that point to make decisions to sort of say, this guy was toxic for America. He has done something. Like, I, you know, one of the topics I wanted to get to just a little bit was the hearings, the Trump cabinet hearings. Because I watched Pam Bondi and I watched Pete Hegseth. And it's tough on the stomach. For a couple reasons.
The alcohol?
Hegseth is obviously unqualified, but he opens his statement by saying, Donald Trump wants me. essentially. And Donald Trump was elected by the American people. So
that's not how this system works. That's not how this system works.
And so he's now he's flagrantly unqualified and he's
both, he's qualified.
Well, by Trump standards, you mean, because he's committed he's been accused of sexual assault.
He's not unlike Matt Gaetz, he's not just some statutory type, statutory sexual assaulter.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the other thing about Hegseth is, you know, the Department of Defense, everybody talks about the Department of Defense and Hegseth, that the Department of Defense is the largest basically employer on the planet.
Yeah.
I would bet money it's the largest purchaser of liquor on the planet. Because it's got PXs, it's got officers' clubs. I mean, it purchases more of everything than probably anybody else on the planet. So, and that would probably include alcohol. And that you know, that,
well, he's promised Senator Wicker he was going to quit drinking. So, well, I'm sure, but, you can take that to the bank.
Yeah, yeah. And if I were chairman of the Joint Chiefs, I'd distract him by taking him on a tour of the officers' clubs throughout the country, throughout the planet.
Well, but it's Pam Bondi that I wanted to talk
about. Pam Bondi.
Because what was interesting about Pam Bondi is that, unlike Hegseth, who is without qualification, she has qualifications.
Yeah, she was an actual line. She was a prosecutor.
Yep. Yeah, and she's done some good things. You know, she's the AG of her state, or was.
Yeah.
And so.
Now, her problem isn't that she's not qualified to be a prosecutor. She's at least as qualified on paper in terms of her experience, education, as Janet Reno, I would say.
Sure.
Janet Reno. Janet Reno was the DA of Miami-Dade County.
But I was not old enough to remember her qualifications.
Thanks for rubbing that
in.
Yeah,
sorry.
Okay. But the whole generational difference. but you're right. The moral issue is the issue. The issue, the fact that she can't say that she cannot bring herself to say the words that Donald Trump lost the 2020 election, that she has to engage in circumlocutions to avoid, you know, I mean, it's comical. Everybody does that. It's like, well, Joe Biden is the president, you know, and it's like, yes, we know that. We understand that.
But she also said there was a peaceful transfer of power.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a peaceful transfer of power, as I say, in the same sense that World War II ended peacefully on the decks of the United States ship Missouri in Tokyo Harbor on September 2, 1945. Mm-hmm. It was a very peaceful signing ceremony, and there was a peaceful surrender. And it was, you know, as after the nuclear fallout had peacefully settled over the land, it was very peaceful.
Yeah. And also, I take issue with the word peaceful, and I think that's a good analogy. Also, just going to take issue with the word transition. If you recall, they weren't
wasn't a transition.
They wouldn't transition. Right. They were like refusing to hand sign the papers.
Right. They told
them
there was a woman who some poor functionary got stuck with, like, they were basically telling her,
you better not sign that. Starting the transition.
Yeah.
So it is
because she had to certify, I think, that the probable winner or something like
that.
That's
right.
There's something in the transition act. Yeah,
and that didn't happen either.
Right.
It eventually happened
like in late December or something, like weeks after it should have happened. It should have happened that Saturday when everybody knew that the vote counts in the contested states were sufficiently, the margins were sufficiently great that no recount was going to change
that. I'm not sure she did it until the election was certified, you know, after they all got
off January 6th? I don't know.
I don't remember for sure.
I don't know. But
don't fact check me on that. That's alleged or whatever.
No, the point is that it didn't happen when it should have happened. It was delayed for weeks.
And so in watching Pam Bondi, you're watching her. She's saying things like, she gets asked, you know, about Trump's call to Raffensperger to find 11,700 votes. And she's like, well, I heard that happened, but I don't really know anything about it.
Yeah, no, it's like those reporters when Trump tweeted something crazy during his administration.
All the senators would run by being like, haven't seen it.
I'm not familiar with that. I don't know anything about that. Yeah.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
And so I just, So sometimes when Never Trump is a moniker that we have shared over the last 8 years, I'm not sure it's useful anymore. But one of the things that people would kind of hurl, I don't know about you, but they would say it to us, to say, they said, well, you're not just Never Trump, you're Never Republican. And it's not – that wasn't true for a long time. But part of what happened is over time, Trump revealed – and compromised so many Republicans. Like, Pam Bondi is qualified, but she is disqualified from the fact that she is lying, and we all know she's lying. She tried to overturn the vote, the election in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And it goes to the more general point is, and this is the reason why, I mean, I was a Republican from the time I registered to vote in, I think, 1982 until March of 2018, 13 months in the administration. And in March 2018, I re-registered as an unaffiliated voter in New Jersey because I thought the Republican Party was no longer a political party. It had become a political cult, a personal cult. And that wasn't even – it wasn't even bad then. It's nothing compared to what it became 2, 3, 4 years later and now 6 years later.
Yeah.
And that's the point. It's like I'm not anti-Republican. I'm against what the Republican Party has become. It doesn't stand for anything other than fealty to Trump. It doesn't stand for – we used to talk about character. It doesn't stand for that. We used to talk about fiscal responsibility. It doesn't stand for that. It used to stand for standing up for America's allies. It doesn't stand for that anymore. I mean, we can go down the line.
This is one of those – this is just an offhanded point. But sometimes, again, things that people will say is they'll say, well, you guys gave up your principles as Republicans. And I'm like, no, we didn't.
No, the party left us.
Everything changed. The party doesn't stand for any of those things anymore.
Doesn't stand for any of it, right.
Show me the things
What's funny is there is actually one – what's interesting is there's actually one appointee that the Democrats like. And that's
Marco Rubio?
No, the Labor Secretary.
Oh, sorry, the Democrats like.
The Democrats, right. The Democrats like.
Yeah.
They like the Labor Secretary because, you know, the political realignment has been such, and the Democrats have lost, you know, the Republicans are trying to capture working class voters.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they appointed someone who that would be union friendly.
Well, it's interesting.
I mean, I don't think they're going to be that union friendly in the end because there's a lot of other things in play. But it's just like there are just – everything is for political expediency. Everything is performance art now. And there are no principles left.
And I keep trying to explain to people – when I say the term Never Trump is a little bit – it's just sort of outlived its utility.
I agree.
So has the phrases like center right or – conservative or like all of these things.
All of these things have completely –
they don't matter anymore.
They don't matter.
They don't describe things properly from what they are.
Right. I mean we're making common cause with people we thought we would never make common cause with because the things that we'd actually disagree on are not things that are actually the subject of political discussion anymore and pale in comparison to the things that unite us, which is like we actually want to have a functioning representative government and we want to have the rule of law and we want to have a system that's not corrupted by a guy who basically is going to give the government up to the highest bidder.
Well, with due respect to our Democratic listeners who I know are smart and principled, I do want to just observe that if you go back 10 years when both of us were Republicans and you look at Joe Rogan, you look at RFK Jr., you look at Tulsi Gabbard, you look at Mark Zuckerberg, you look at Elon, you go down the list of a lot of people who are going to be on the
disc. None of those people were conservatives.
And you go to Donald Trump. Every single one of them was a Democrat.
Right. And Donald Trump, yeah.
Not like a good Democrat with like big power. They were like the kooky side, but they all like realigned into the Republican Party, took it over, hijacked it, and now it's completely
different.
You know, Donald
Trump gave money to Kamala Harris.
I do know that.
And Hillary Clinton.
I know.
Ooh.
He was a New York limousine liberal.
Yeah.
Not pro-life. I mean, this is everything. And if you had watched these hearings, the Pam Bondi hearings, she – was difficult to stomach, but not nearly as difficult as watching every Republican senator use the opportunity to talk about the weaponization of the Justice Department under Joe Biden. They used the entire hearing as a billboard to solidify the narrative that Donald Trump was wrongly prosecuted and targeted by Joe Biden's weaponized
Which is complete gaslighting. They let him go. They treated him. They did give him treat him specially. They treated him more favorably than any other person would have been treated had they had done the same things.
And there's a lesson in there about for Merrick Garland, and I'm sorry, Mrs. Wheeler or Miss Wheeler.
She
but
can
the
take
fact
it.
Is, this guy was. Everybody is going to Merrick Garland is being accused of weaponizing the DOJ anyway, and the
guy the only person has the only right
needed to walk is completely walking free.
Yeah, and the one person who really has a case about the Justice Department being weaponized against them turns out to be Hunter Biden.
Hunter Biden's not the best guy.
I agree with you, but I'm just saying it's like. If in the normal course of a normal, if he had never become the president's son, nothing would have ever happened to him.
Well, speaking of, or he would have loved to have gone back and told Joe Biden back in 2022, "Hey, buddy, you did it. You won. You beat Donald Trump, and you just held off this whole there's no red wave. Now is the best. And you know what?" Keep your son safe and quit while you're ahead.
Yeah, no.
All right. We should quit while we are ahead, George.
Yes, no. We've consumed our such time as we may consume or whatever they say.
It was a real stem winder today, but I'm glad we got to do this in person. Thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of George Conway Explains It All. We will catch you guys soon.
Bye-bye.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Oh, Conway, tell Longwell all about it. Those legal problems can't live without it. From the Ebola mess to the Russian ties. Oh, Sarah, listen close.